In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And at this moment in time, we are going to be talking about a subject near and dear to Mr. Mike's heart.
Indeed.
And that will be video games.
Yes, I'm quite the fan.
Specifically, today we're just going to be talking about what our favorite video game is. Single favorite video game. I know it's hard to kind of distill your love of video games down to one single game.
Yeah.
I mean, like
I would have to split it up by like genre a lot of the time, but I'm going to see what I can make happen.
Yeah. I mean, like right now, there's a game I'm playing all the time. I'm playing Diablo 3 all the time.
Cool.
Right now with the wife.
Yeah.
But that would not be my favorite game of all time.
Okay. I would like to hear yours first, because I think it's going to take me some time to kind of figure out exactly, because I got a lot of different types of like, man. No, this is going to be tough.
I understand. Maybe hopefully hearing why this specific game is my favorite game might help you to kind of distill and see, okay, I can see what game kind of stands above the rest for me personally.
Totally.
So for me, my favorite game, single favorite game, and it luckily spawned a saga of games, I guess.
Yep.
So it helps. My single favorite game is Halo.
Really?
Really. You probably wouldn't have thought that.
No. I never really got into Halo at all.
You don't, from
but what I'm not a first-person shooter
that's
guy,
what I, that's
so
what I
that makes
say.
Sense.
From what we've talked about with games and whatnot, first-person shooters are not necessarily your list of games.
That's not my forte, man.
And they typically aren't with me either, although I can say I can go back to a earlier series that that Bungie, the company that made the first couple Halo games, there's an earlier series they did that was only available on the computer, the Marathon series.
Okay.
That I spent a lot of time playing when I was a teenager. My friend and our tech guy, our other tech guy, our computer tech guy,
yes,
Rob.
Yes.
He actually is the one who had those games and introduced me to those games. He was the one that he had bought his Xbox and had Halo on order because it was, you know, the launch game with the Xbox.
Yeah.
The original Xbox. He had set, had him on order, and he told me the day it was coming in, you know, the day that it was all being released, and not to talk to him for like 2 weeks. He wasn't going to answer his phone, not to come over his house. He was just going to sit and play Halo for 2 weeks.
Totally.
Interestingly, when they first announced Halo to American audiences, it was originally going to be more of a real-time strategy game, like a StarCraft-style game. They eventually did one like that called Halo Wars.
Really?
Where they made a real-time strategy, but they were originally... Bungie had also made... They had made the Marathon series, which was a first-person shooter, but they had also made the Myth series. If you're familiar with the Myth games?
Myth is fantastic.
And those are a real-time strategy game, but like... Yeah. Medieval times, fantasy times.
Yeah, totally.
You know, wizards and dwarves and all that crap.
Yeah.
So Myth 2 had just come out and it was a huge game. It was being featured heavily at the Macworld Expo.
Yes.
And there was some rumor that there was going to be an announcement on the newest game, this Halo game. So I actually drove my buddy Rob down to San Francisco to go to this internet cafe because... Children, back then, the place to, where you got public internet was in an internet cafe. Your Starbucks did not have Wi-Fi because nobody had Wi-Fi back then. It didn't exist, at least not for us.
Would you bring your own computer with you?
No, they had computers and you just sit at a computer and do your thing.
It's like and, a LAN cafe.
Yeah, very much so.
Cool.
And, you know, they were all big into starting up the game all at the same time so that the startup music happened on every computer and the whole thing at the same time. And this was the first time that that Bungie and the guys from Bungie were there. Because at that point, they had a couple of moderately successful computer games, but they didn't have like the best-selling game of all time at that point. So the guys were actually there. I got to meet two of them, shake their hands, these guys that created this empire. And they released the first information. Cortana was already a thing at that point.
Yes.
Cortana the AI, for those who have not played the game, I'm not sure how many of you haven't played Halo, but still. Cortana the AI was already a thing. There had already been messages sent out from Bungie through the internet to people that were interested in whatever Bungie was doing at the time that were Cortana messages.
Yep.
And there was, again, this is the first time anybody in North America had heard anything about this new game, Halo. We got to see some basic footage of the real-time strategy stuff, early Warthogs, and it was a top-down view because, again, it's that real-time strategy type game. At that time, it was still going to be only a Mac game, only available on Macintosh systems. It was only going to be that type of game. It wasn't going to be available on Windows computers. At that time, it was before Microsoft had bought Bungie and made Halo the launch game for the Xbox.
Cool.
It was just going to be a Mac game. And so, interestingly, they took a giant picture. There was a huge, I'd say 10-foot wide stairway up to a second level in this internet cafe.
Right.
And they had everybody pile on this staircase for a big picture. Now, me, at the time, not being really into gaming, and not really being into anything computer related, I wasn't that kind of a nerd. I didn't want to be in the picture because I figured this is just a picture of a bunch of computer nerds with their computer game that nobody would care about at any point in time.
Right.
So I hid behind the staircase while the picture was taken. Now my buddy, Rob, he's in the picture. But yeah, I'm not in the picture. Kind of regret that now, considering. Yeah. So the game came out, and it was a couple of years after it had been out before I had an opportunity to have an Xbox. I've always been about a system behind what most people are.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just the nature of things. Gaming came late enough in my life that video gaming just wasn't as big a thing to me as it was to other people.
Right.
I enjoyed doing it, but by the time I got like a Sega, everybody else had PlayStation, the original PlayStation, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, okay.
So, I'm about a generation behind on systems.
Yeah, totally.
It's like even now, I have an Xbox 360 and a PS3. I do not have a PS4 or an Xbox One.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm just one behind, usually everybody else. So, when the new thing comes out, I will end up getting most likely a PS4 because there's some things on there that I can get. I want an Xbox One just so I can keep my Halo love going.
Cool.
But we'll see. Anyway, point being, when I finally got a chance to play this game, it was one of the first games as an adult that I can say I was able to beat. Actually play all the way through and beat. Because I'm not very good at video games.
Okay.
The only other one that I've really been able to beat well was Episode 1 Pod Racer for Nintendo 64. And I mean, that's a racing game. So I don't consider beating a racing game the same as beating an actual story game.
Well, I don't know. Like, there's certain types of racing games. I know you said you do have a PlayStation or a PS2, right?
I have PS2 and PS3.
The original Gran Turismo or Gran Turismo 2, the two-disc deal, some serious like completion that needs to go into that sucker.
I will say that is one of my favorite games. Again, not the favorite, but one of my favorite games. It's an amazing game. But Halo, just the combat system that they had set up for it, the way the buttons were set up for combat, the way I love the original Xbox controller. Most people find it to be big and bulky. They like the Xbox 360 controller better.
Yeah.
But I personally love the original Xbox controller. I felt it was an appropriate size, and the buttons were laid out in such a way that made it easy to be able to play. I love the ability to have one trigger for firing and another trigger to be able to throw grenades.
Cool.
Because the grenade thing is a big deal for me. Being able to throw a grenade and fire at the same time,
yeah,
I think is really a key to certain strategies of beating people. And then to be able to do that and have a button for melee attack so that you can throw a couple of grenades, fire at them as you're advancing on them, and then smack them when their shield is down, it became something that it made sense to me.
Gotcha.
And I've tried other first-person shooter games, other lines that are considered to be some of the more desirable and even bigger first-person shooter game setups that people wait in line for hours at a GameStop, you know, for the midnight release of the things. And none of them, I feel, have the same button setup or feel. The button setup, you can set it up however you want to in your menu, but it just doesn't feel the same. I don't feel like in combat I can do the same things that I could do in the Halo game.
I gotcha.
And while I love the other games and many of the other games in the series, I've played everything that is available, at least on the Xbox 360.
Right.
The first one just still has a nostalgia point to me that I really love the game. I can play the levels over and over again. I play them with my kid all the time.
Yeah.
It's just one of those games that, like, if I'm bored and want to go kill a bunch of aliens and not feel bad about it,
right,
I'll just go put in Halo and go about killing stuff. I don't care if I've played the first crash landing level, the first level where you crash land on the ring. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many times you've played Halo, so I don't know how.
I honestly never really got into it. I do have a copy of Halo for the original Xbox. But that is probably about the most, like, I played it a little bit. I think I played a little bit of multiplayer of it.
Yeah.
Death matches are kind of fun, but I've never been big into first person shooters in general. Like, not even Doom or Quake, man. I never got big into them.
See, I had friends that were really big into Doom and Quake. I used to play it on the Nintendo 64. There was a Nintendo 64 version of Quake, if you can imagine that.
Yeah, Quake 64.
That thing was fun as hell.
Yeah.
But that's why, I mean, that game, the Halo game is just, again, just a game that I feel comfortable playing. I feel joy playing it. And the multiplayer, at least every other week, my son and I, with whoever else is in the living room at the time that we can get to play, we'll play the multiplayer and go around and just kill each other and have tons of fun doing it.
Nice.
Especially because I have a special edition version of Halo. Now, it's still an Xbox version, but it's a special edition Xbox version. Mm-hmm. So it actually has weapons that weren't available in the first game. Mm-hmm. It's like in the first game, even in multiplayer, you couldn't use the Elite Sword. It wasn't wasn't a weapon that was available. It was only available in Halo 2. Mm-hmm. But in the version that I have with the different map upgrades that I have, it has that available for the first Halo in the just again in multiplayer. And you get the sword, forget it. Ain't nobody going to get you down. It's amazing.
Totally.
But does that help you at all? Does that give you kind of impetus to see what to kind of work with?
Yeah.
Thought for your game. So what would be,
okay.
I'm actually giving you, I'm making sure to give you a little more time here because I know that, again, gaming, it'd be like asking us what our favorite movies are. And like, I would need 40 minutes. You may need 20 minutes. Cause I'm going to talk for freaking ever about my favorite movie.
Totally. Totally. I am. All right. So first, I want you to take a guess, a random wild guess, what you think, and I know my friends would probably know at least what franchise
I'm going to say Ocarina of Time.
No.
Wow, okay.
But you're not far off.
So it is one of them.
It is one of them.
Is it the original?
Yes.
Wow,
that's
okay.
That's my personal favorite.
Interesting.
Now, I have a couple of different types of favorites. There's the reason why the first one. Now, what we're talking about the Legend of Zelda series, obviously, anybody doesn't know what the Ocarina of Time is.
Let's get some more information.
There is such a rich, developed history with the Legend of Zelda series, but there's so much I like about the original Zelda game still to this day that I would consider that still my favorite game in the series.
Wow.
Not to say, and, you know, mad props, especially to the new game. The new one, Breath of the Wild.
I've heard a lot of great things about that.
It is directly influenced by both the first Zelda and many other more recent adventure action games that have come out more recently.
Okay, so that's one that for people who are not necessarily Legend of Zelda fans, it's a good bridge in if you have the newer systems.
If you have the newer systems, you'll get an idea of what the original one is, but you kind of have to know a little bit about the connotation between the two. So basically, the Legend of Zelda series has basically been a hand-holding, story-driven adventure series since the third game.
Okay.
Okay, so the thing about, I'll talk about the third one. Link to the Past was the one that showed up on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
For a very, very, very long time, that was my personal favorite.
Okay.
I actually kind of tend to, it's still like way up there on the list.
Yeah.
That game is the one that developed a lot of the storyline that everybody knows about.
Okay.
That major, it's just got a lot of influences. There's two entire worlds to it, two whole maps
where
you transfer between one map and the other map.
Okay.
You have the regular overworld map or the standard regular world that you start out in, and then there is another map afterwards. In the first world, you have three pendants that you have to acquire that represent the three separate Triforces.
Yeah.
Pieces. There are the three separate Triforces, and then you pluck the Master Sword, which is the big badass sword of the game, the main sword that actually goes through pretty much all the games in the franchise. And then you get transferred into what's called the Dark World. In the Dark World, that is the much larger portion of the game. You think you've got the game about beat until you realize you get transferred to a completely alternative map that now has 8 castles to beat on top of the 3 you've already beaten and all of the accomplishments you made beforehand. But the thing is you're stuck within a certain sequence. You have to do things in a certain way. There's no way to go outside of that if you're playing the game in a traditional format.
Okay, so and this, you say this is in game 3.
This is in the 3rd game of the franchise. It's A Link to the Past is the name of that
and
game.
So every other game after this, mm-hmm. it still has this kind of more linear story.
It is. They are all very linear.
So
they continue to go linear all the way through. So the 4th major franchise game for console. We're just going to stick with console systems. Handhelds, we're not even going to make it a part of, because there are great handheld games, but they all follow specific storylines. You have to do things in a certain order because there's dialogue and story that has to unfold in a certain fashion. That's actually constant with all of the games, but the console games mainly are really, really, really strict on it. There's no way to, well, there are ways to glitch out of it and stuff, and people speed run and do all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I'll talk about that at another time, but essentially, the games like Ocarina of Time, Twilight Princess, Skyward Sword, all of those, they're very linear.
Ocarina of Time, I've played multiple times on mm-hmm. 2 different formats. It on the 64, uh-huh. right, which is what it came on, right?
Uh-huh.
And then I actually have it on my PSP. I have.
Hacked your PSP?
No, actually, it's not on the PSP. I am wrong. I'm wrong. It's actually on my 3DS.
Oh, your DS.
I have
a DS. Oh, the 3DS version of Ocarina is great. And it's a very different feeling game, but it's the same game.
The thing about it is, like, there gets to a point where it's like, I feel that all I'm doing is just plodding along, following a story.
Right.
And there are lulls in it that definitely, as much as many people consider that the, and I'm speaking of opinion here, but it's considered to be the best of the Zelda games by a large group of people, Ocarina of Time is.
A lot of people do it. I think mainly that's just due to a nostalgia factor. There's a lot of people that actually like the direct sequel to Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, because it's a complete break from the sequence.
Majora's Mask is definitely an unusual entry.
Very unusual. It's very dark.
Especially its animation style is a very different type of style.
Yeah, it uses the original game engine, but the cool thing about Majora's Mask was that they had less than a year to develop it.
Yeah.
And it was, basically what they were trying to do was, like, they started trying to do an expansion pack on the original Ocarina of Time story as part of a disk drive apparatus that was going to be sold with the N64 that fell through.
Oh, yes, yes.
And instead of starting a new game and trying to do a new engine and all that kind of stuff, one of the main developers talked to Shigeru Miyamoto, who was the president of Nintendo at the time, I believe.
Yeah.
Or he's one of the heads of...
Somewhere involved.
I'm not sure if he's president, but he created the Legend of Zelda series. He created Mario. He created like all of these major, major series, and he's very responsible for development and all that kind of stuff. But that aside, that game was, and we're kind of getting off kilter here, but of course this is going to take a long time.
That's why I gave you more
this
time.
That one was a challenge that was basically done on a dare.
Wow.
He said, you can use this engine, but you've got less than a year to make a game. Go. Normally, Zelda games take like 4 or 5 years to develop.
Yeah, they do take a while.
Yeah.
A
lot, the only one that didn't do that was like the second Zelda.
Well, especially considering
it came out on the NES.
With a lot of the modern ones. That's the thing, that with the most recent one,
mm-hmm.
the Wind, whatever.
Oh, Breath of the Wild?
Breath of the Wild. That one. That one, from what I understand, I've not had an opportunity to see it. And I don't envision myself getting a Switch anytime soon.
Right.
Because that's the only thing it's really available on.
Get it on Wii U.
Okay.
But yeah, Wii U's a dead system. That's literally the only game should get it for, because all those Wii U games are now coming out on the Switch for the most part.
But my understanding is that that's one of the more beautiful games.
It's gorgeous.
As far as it's
absolutely gorgeous. And that's actually, I'll tie that one to the original and why I like it here in a minute.
So... go ahead, continue.
Okay, so basically the idea of those games is that everything from about the 3rd game on through the entire franchise up until Breath of the Wild was a very linear game.
Yeah.
You had a sequence to go in, you could only read certain text, so a story starts to unfold and develop and becomes a big, rich story, which is great. Awesome. But the problem is you are stuck within a specific sequence and you cannot go from point A to point C without breaking point B. You have to go through point B. The first Legend of Zelda was essentially much more experimental in the fact that when you start the game, you create a save file, you hit go, you are dropped onto a map or onto a screen.
Yeah.
You're standing outside You have a shield and you have no sword and you don't know what to do. You have three directions to go, up, right, or left, and there is a cave on the screen that you're in. So the first thing you think is go, okay, I guess I go into the cave. And in the cave, there is an old man with a wooden sword. You get the wooden sword. Now you have a sword.
Yeah.
Now you're armed.
I've been that far in the game.
Now you can start going, okay, now what do I do? And you start walking around. There's monsters in one of the screens. Any one of the screens you go to, you start killing the monsters.
So basically your love of this game is the fact that it's really self-driven as opposed to story-driven.
There is a good story behind it. Yeah. It was when they first started it, but when they wrote the game, when they created it, one of the biggest things I loved about it was the fact that when they were experimenting, they were doing beta testing for the game. They originally started you out with a sword and a shield. That was it, right? You had a sword and a shield. So people were just like, well, I'm here with a sword and a shield, but I don't know what to do. What do I do? So instead of, here's the deal. Instead of, the initial feedback.
So they take the sword away.
They took the sword away as feedback because people were like, okay, I'm here, I'm armed. Now what? So what they did was that's what happened. Initially, the feedback was, I'm here with a sword and a shield, but I don't know what to do. Where do I go? What do I do?
So they take the sword away
and create the incentive.
To go and find something.
To find something. Exactly.
Nice.
Go explore. Figure it out.
So once you explore the one thing and get a sword, you're like, oh, well, what's down this direction?
Yeah.
What's down that direction?
You start what's to become, here? Yeah, your curiosity is what drives you to complete the game all the way through.
So, okay,
that's the point of the game.
I see now why that list is a favorite for you.
Yeah, and it's fantasy-based, and it's all this kind of stuff, and cool, whatever, and it's not as quote-unquote advanced as many other games, but that in itself was one of the most innovative things any game developer had done at any point, because every game up to that point was, you are this character, your goal is to move to the right until you complete the level, or your goal is to... They lay out the story, and yeah, you start out as your Link. Wow. You're supposed to fight monsters. Well, you find out you're Link, and you're supposed to fight monsters, but now you don't know how to fight because you don't have a damn sword or any weapon.
And it starts you to go,
well, where do I go to find a sword?
In many ways, that game may be responsible for the increasing gaming altogether in the sense that it really... gives you that impetus to do something. It gives you the inspiration that you just don't stand around at a time when people were still trying to understand what place video games, especially home console video games, because this isn't during the Nintendo time where Nintendo's still being introduced into the market and still being a thing.
This was one of the two launch titles that came out with the original NES in the Americas.
And see, that's to me, that's a perfect thing. This game basically teaches you how to play video games while you are playing a video game. That's amazing.
It is a tutorial and a full-fledged game at once. As a matter of fact, this game also introduced a secondary full map with more stuff. So when they wrote the game, when they made it, you have a total of 9 dungeons to go into. The story of the game is Ganon the villain, a giant pig creature monster, has captured Princess Zelda.
And yes, let's be clear for anybody that doesn't know. Mm-hmm. It is the Legend of Zelda. Zelda is the princess that in almost every version you are trying to rescue. Zelda is not the character you are playing.
Not
the character
the green
you are
guy.
Playing is Link.
Yes, his name is
typically.
Link. As a matter of fact, you know why his name is Link?
Because he was found underground while people were digging to make room for a pool, and he likes to light frogs on fire and eat them. What? Sorry, Encino Man reference. Go on.
But good.
Thank
that
you.
Took me a minute.
Thank you.
No, his name is Link because he is the link between the player and the game world.
That really?
Yes.
Seriously?
Yes.
I can honestly say I did not know that before this moment.
That's the reason why.
I'm smiling.
Isn't that cool?
That
clever,
point.
Right?
That is.
Yeah. So I like that. Now you can name him whatever you want to, but the name of the character itself is Link because he's a link between the player and the world.
That's
of the game.
Amazing.
Now, that being said, the biggest part about this that I, as far as the story, Ganon has captured Zelda. Zelda has something called the Triforce. She has taken the second Triforce, of which there are now 3, but they didn't add the third one until the second game.
Okay.
She has taken a second Triforce and busted it into 8 pieces. Your goal, as you get inserted into the game, is beat the labyrinths and the monsters that guard the Triforce pieces. Piece together the Triforce of Courage. Take the Triforce of Courage to Ganon. Battle Ganon. Defeat him. Rescue Zelda. Simple, right?
Yes.
Technically speaking.
But?
But there are hidden secrets everywhere. There are bushes you have to set on fire to find pathways. There are areas where you'll have, normally lakes have fairies in them. There's an area with a lake with no fairy on it that if you play the whistle that normally transports you to random maps of the, random parts of the map. Well, they're not really random. They're like different levels you've defeated.
Yeah.
But if you play the whistle in that area, it dries the lake out and exposes a trap door that is to another dungeon.
And of course, this is the time frame before the internet where you couldn't find out all these secrets on the internet.
So do you know how you got to beat the game?
I believe how there you was a, through? I believe there was a phone call thing that you could do. Wasn't there something you could call to get tips and
tricks?
There
was, but the idea behind it was to talk to your friends about the game. The game specifically tried to, the purpose of the game was to engage in a social conversation with how to beat it. It became a subject matter.
So they were already concerned with people becoming zombified by video games back in the day. And this, and they were like, you know what? We're going to make sure that we hide enough stuff in here that people got to talk about the game and got to share it with each other.
Yep.
That's, I mean,
foresight. I know, right?
That's foresight.
Yeah, totally.
Wow.
And on top of that, here's the deal. Once they made the game, once they completed the original first map,
yeah,
they realized that they had only used about half of the game code available to them as in the chip. So they had a small chip, like a 56 kilobyte chip, and all of the stuff that they had done with such small amount of data, they still had half the data left. So you know what they did? They built another map in the game. After you beat it the first time, you can open that beat and save file, and now you have a rearranged map with harder enemies and a higher difficulty.
Wow, I didn't even know that was possible.
Yep, there is an entire second quest on the very first game that ever came out. I've never beaten the second quest.
That's
I've actually technically never beaten the first one because Ganon's Tower, the ninth dungeon in the game,
yeah,
the dungeon is the same size as the entire world map.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a lot of playing.
It is a lot of playing. It's about the same size. It's actually the shape of a giant skull, and there's secret rooms in the eye holes and like all this crazy stuff going down.
Wow.
Yeah. There's so much going on with that game that a lot of people don't necessarily account for. They just consider it a relatively simplistic story. But here's the cool thing that I liked about it. It was so influential that it became the influence for the new game, Breath of the Wild, in that with Breath of the Wild, it's the first game in the Zelda series since the very first game that was completely nonlinear. Even the second game was linear up to a point.
Oh, nice.
But it's the first game in the series that's completely nonlinear to where all you do is you take care of a tutorial section, you gain basic abilities.
I think I've heard.
And then you get launched out into a world that's 1.5 times the size of the Skyrim game world.
And Skyrim is freaking huge.
Yes. This is 1.5 times the size of Skyrim's map, and you don't know what to do, but your weapons break. You have to cook and eat food. You barely have, and there's a big story too.
This is an open sandbox game that's taken to a great level.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's an open sandbox game that finally is, it's honestly, I think it encompasses the concept of what I personally believe that the Zelda franchise should have been this whole time, but the problem is you can't tell such an in-depth story without having to hold somebody's hand through the story.
Yeah.
It's like a film. There are a lot of films that you can tell in random order. I mean, Tarantino has started to do that. But the problem with telling a film in a random order is that you can easily get lost. And the film storyline has to be relatively simplistic.
And
if you notice,
mm-hmm. Tarantino did that. And then he had to pull away from the extremity of that.
Yeah. He had to do it because it was hard to follow.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is if Tarantino's films were interactive, you know what I mean? Like, take the Tarantino influence and somebody did that. Rockstar did it and made, like, Grand Theft Auto, I would say.
Yeah.
It's very similar to that, especially in the later games.
Yeah.
The storyline is fantastic and the voice acting and everything else is great.
Yeah.
But if you take the sequence of telling a rich story, You have to tell it in a specific order. Otherwise, things get lost.
Yeah. And this, if you plan out a story like that, you want every part of it to make sense and every beat has a reason and purpose.
Exactly. So what they did was they simplified the story so that if you found it in pieces, you could put it together enough. But the concentration on the game is being a game.
Wow.
And so
that's interesting.
I like the fact that the original Legend of Zelda is a simple story. You know what the entire thing is from the point you start the game if you open the manual. From there, now it's figure it the hell out.
That's
what do you do?
You're
like, okay, now what do I do? And you just keep going and there's always new things to find.
I gotta say, yeah, I think you have a more informed choice than me, but that shows your that shows your love of video gaming.
It's I like there's a lot more to video gaming for me specifically than it is just like liking something because it's my favorite thing. Again, we were talking in another episode about how I was huge into animation.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because how is it done? How did they do it?
I was thinking the same idea. As you're talking about this now, I was thinking to myself about that animation discussion.
Yeah.
And thinking, wow, maybe this ties into his great love of video games. His previous love of animation ties into his love of video games. That actually makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
So I hope that, as always, we've given you guys something to think about.
Yeah.
I think this was a nice, interesting conversation. This is, by the way, going to be one of many conversations revolving around video games, since video games are such a major part of Mike's life. It's one of the things, like movies, for instance, would be another thing that we have regular conversations about. So hopefully you'll hear more of us talking about video games. I'm really interested in at some point doing kind of a history of video games episode with Mike here, just to get some of his knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely. So, by the way, just in case if you guys are listening, please comment with your favorite video games. Give us a little backstory as to why. I think it'd be great. We'd like to go ahead and throw these on the podcast later, maybe when we talk about this subject matter again.
Yeah, it would be great to be able to bring up other people's favorites and discuss them. Maybe discuss our feelings about those.
Yeah, absolutely.
As bad as they may be. I guarantee you'll try to be nice about it, and I'll be like, nope, that game sucks. It's stupid. That's just kind of how I am. But thank you. That's a fantastic idea for anybody listening.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll be back. Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And we're back.
All right, so what are we talking about today?
We are talking about something interesting, something I actually use this thought thing to get myself to go to sleep on certain nights when my brain is too active.
Okay.
Gives me something to focus on.
Gotcha.
And what this is, what would you do if you won the lottery?
Interesting.
I'm talking like a huge sum of money lottery. I'm talking at least bare minimum like $80 million. Bring home after all, you pay all the taxes and all the other crap. I'm talking like a huge, one of those huge lottery things. Not like, like you win like $1 million, but like I'm talking money that you and I would never see.
Yeah, totally. That's a really good question on my end, man.
So you want me to kind of?
I mean, I have like basic stuff that I would do. But,
like what?
Well, I mean, I always wanted to like tour and. You know, be a musician and that kind of stuff. I would probably spend a vast majority of that money finding out how to pay to do what I want for a living. I mean, you want to keep making money, or at least like trying to figure out how to continue to sustain that while you do stuff that you want to do. I would basically start my retirement early, up to a point. But when I say start my retirement early, I mean, I would fund a label. I would travel. I would tour. Honestly, like I want to tour as a musician. That's like dream job here. I want to be able to do that and work myself up and be able to do it. If I got $80 million to start out on, I'm doing that stuff comfortably, man. Well, I'm doing it with like, let's go ahead and skip the Winnebago and like the you know.
Oh, you're getting semis and whatnot.
If we're getting semis, dude, tour
do you
bus.
Need that much stuff?
Or if we want to fly whatever, like I'm paying for the whole flipping band and the whole thing.
So are you setting up a concert where you do your encore after stepping out of a giant rotating lemon?
Why not?
That's covered in sequins.
Sure.
Right, Bono. Okay.
Yeah.
I was at that show, by the way.
Wait, he actually used.
There was, he it was a stepped giant, out of a giant lemon covered in sequins. Band. That was a thing.
The whole band did.
It was what during, tour was that?
The Pop Mart tour for the pop for the album Pop U2 Pop.
Okay,
96, I believe.
A giant lemon.
A giant freaking lemon, because they have the song Lemon.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a giant freaking. Well, I wouldn't say sequin. It was to look like a disco ball. And right. It rotated and it moved and then it opened up and they came
and
out.
And the
of
band
it.
Came out of a giant lemon.
And then
lemon.
It was Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me.
Oh, that's what that one, huh?
Well, that was on the Batman Forever
song.
Soundtrack.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was interesting note, just a little side note, that was an animated video for the Batman Forever soundtrack.
Yeah.
Because he was asked to revive the Mephisto character from the Zoropa, whatever it was, the one album.
That I'm not. Tour? I'm not big in. I never really
YouTube
got
fan.
Like into
okay.
U2, so I don't know all that stuff.
Bono had a specific character for the one album,
right.
And the tour of that album. That it was kind of like a devilish type character,
right?
And he was asked to revive it for the Batman Forever soundtrack.
Like his, it sounds like his Chris Gaines character.
But it was no, but still same kind of music. At least not an attempt at something completely different.
Okay.
And a bad haircut and soul patch. But anyway.
Wait, this is what Bono did?
No, that's what Chris
Gaines
thing
was. Oh, I
was
going to say, that's
was.
What the Chris Gaines thing was.
Bono
that's,
was more of the, it was more
for those that don't remember, Chris Gaines was the, was Garth Brooks' rock persona.
Yeah, and attempted
was
a TV
massive
movie.
Massive failure.
Very much so.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that they wanted to revive that Mephisto character, and Bono was done with the character, so they made it an animated video with the Mephisto character in it, because Bono wouldn't dress as the character anymore.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Whatever. It's Bono.
Oh, that's fun.
He does whatever he wants to.
Yeah, whatever.
But anyway, so you would tour as a musician if you had that kind of money. If you wanted
yeah,
that kind
totally.
Of money.
I would totally do that. I would learn what to do and figure out how to actually have a self, like I would be able to have a self-sustaining music career.
Okay.
And be able to have enough to put myself in there and be able to run it on my own. If you get $80 million.
Well, I'm curious. How do you think your wife would feel about you being on the road that much? Because I guarantee she wouldn't want to be with her plethora of animals and whatnot.
I've got $80 million. Those things are coming with us, dude.
Oh, okay. You're going to have
you
like
kidding?
Environmentally
yeah.
controlled stuff? Okay. This is so interesting to me.
Yeah, dude. I'm going to sustain me, my wife, a band full of people, buy my parents a house. Like, I'm going to do all this crap. You kidding
me? Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, I would buy my parents a house, but they own like five.
Yeah, so
they're not like
really not much
but,
of a point.
Well, what they do is they flip. So they sustain and flip houses.
It's not like they own five completely empty houses that they just live in.
But
I'd
buy my other set
times.
Of parents a house.
Well, there's that. That's a good
you know
possibility.
What I mean? Like there's you could do stuff with that money.
You could.
Yeah, I would take care of, you know, I'd take care of myself, do what I want to do, find out how to take care of my family, find
I'm,
out how
I'm,
to like
I'm
yeah,
gonna ask,
I would do that.
I'm going to ask the kind of conceited question.
Okay.
What would you do for a brother here?
You think you're not getting a house out of this deal?
Well, I mean, you have to buy me a house for a whole different reason. But you'd buy some houses
would,
for
yeah.
some people.
I would tour. I would. Yeah, I would tour. I'd take care of people, man.
It's this.
You know?
This
I'd
is,
take care of people that you know that have been taking care of me, and I'd tour.
This
like
is
that's what I
want
to do. I want to be a musician. This is why I'm getting into the technical stuff. That's why I did all that.
Well, that means that I'm going to have to when I go through this mental exercise to try to get myself to sleep certain nights, I'm going to have to change some of the stuff that I have in this mental exercise. Because interestingly, and this hopefully this doesn't come out wrong. I know that I'm going to when my wife hears this, I know that she is going to incessantly. Give me crap about what I'm about to say.
Oh no.
While now I just said I have these thoughts, I do this mental exercise while I'm trying to get myself to go to sleep. I'm lying in bed trying to get myself to go to sleep. So that means
okay.
that right now I'm admitting that while I am lying in bed trying to go to sleep, I have thoughts about Mike. It's a little disturbing. But
I'm
anyway.
I'm a little confused.
Okay. My turn then?
Sure.
Okay. Now,
mean that you're going to explain yourself?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'll explain your part first.
Okay.
In this, one of the goals that I would do is we're currently recording this podcast in Mike's home studio,
right?
Which is basically part of a garage. that has been converted into a studio. It's a converted
garage. Yeah.
And it has a very good conversion on it to make it like a studio.
Thank you.
One wall specifically, if you look at one wall, it looks like a studio. The other walls...
Sort of. It's just kind of slathered in sound foam that I bought on Amazon.
That's okay.
It does the job, damn it.
And it definitely does the job. One of the things that I would do, at least the part involving you with the lottery, is I would actually build us a full studio.
Oh, build like an actual full-end studio for us to do this stuff?
A full studio. Not just for this. This studio would have three separate recording rooms in it.
Okay.
And each one their own control room, mastering room, whatever cool. It's called.
Yeah.
This studio would be the start of your label. You would be in charge of this whole studio.
Well, that would be fantastic. Thank you.
I would be the quote-unquote owner of the studio. But
yes.
That would only be in name of owning the property and the studio itself. You would run the whole damn thing. I wouldn't be your boss. I would just be the guy who owns the land. You would run the whole studio to record whatever you wanted to record. And especially because I would intend to buy this house or have this property where this studio would be close to a concert venue that is here north of Sacramento, an amphitheater that we have been to shows at personally multiple times.
Of course.
And
many festivals.
And it would be as state-of-the-art as possible and have parking and driveway capability, parking lot capability for semi-trucks, trailers,
right.
So that any bands coming through the area would know about a studio where they could do some quick recording if they needed to.
Oh, you're talking about a supplemental studio to that area so that we could, we could catch some business in case somebody were to roll on through. You know what I would do? I would set it up so that we could wire it so that we could, record live shows and offer that.
If
that's possible, that's handled in a different format.
Well, the thing
and people do that mobile now, but I would love to make that happen.
Yeah, too. The thing would be I would have you more chained to a location. My way of helping you, if I had won the lottery, my way of helping you out would be to have you chained to that location. So two of the studio rooms would be for you to bring in bands, record bands.
Yeah,
set
totally.
Things up. The other one would be our personal one where we would set up my musical equipment, your musical equipment, our podcasting equipment.
Yeah.
So we got to record our own crap there when we didn't have to worry about the other bands that were coming in to record.
Sweet.
So
I like it.
That would be the part of my... lottery dream,
yeah,
plan, whatever that involves you. So sadly, no travel, but
you wouldn't travel.
Okay. Well, no, you wouldn't travel.
I wouldn't travel.
I wouldn't either, but I'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
But you wouldn't get to travel to do your music. However, you would have a studio where basically you ran the entire thing.
Cool.
And since it would be an actual legitimate business, you'd also get paid.
Sweet.
So it'd be your full time job.
Hell yeah, I'm there.
So. And on top,
I'm there. I'd be happy.
You'd have a base wage that you'd be getting, and then on top of that, whatever bands you signed and recorded, and they got sales and whatnot, that's also your money you'd be making.
Cool.
So basically, we'd start a record label and build you a studio to your specifications to work exactly what you want it to be.
That sounds fantastic.
Now, for the rest of it, I'd buy. Again, this large area of land to put the studio on, I'd probably end up with something akin to a farm, but
cool.
I would build the house. And I say the house because it would be basically where you want to travel and go and see different things.
Right.
I want to build a house that makes me never want to leave it.
That makes sense.
And I mean, to the point of some of the things that would be necessary in my house, I want a walk-in freezer, a walk-in refrigerator. I want a loading dock so that I could actually have food delivered in trucks and not have to go to grocery stores to buy food.
Okay.
Walk-in pantry as well. Food is important to me.
Right.
But just have literally almost everything that I could want in a house.
Right.
Where I only have to leave if I want to leave. I don't have to leave for anything else. Because frankly, I like staying at home a lot.
Yeah. Okay. I can understand that.
I'm kind of a homebody. As far as taking care of family and friends... There might be some of that. luckily for my dad, I don't have to buy him a house. He has one. Even if I offered to get him upgrades or fixing on the house, I doubt he would take it.
Oh, really?
Just because that's who he is.
Yeah.
There is a car I would buy him because there's a specific car he would like to have. But beyond that, I could say the most of it would be to set the house up, and most importantly, set it up so my kids have a place to be long after I am gone. But the travel thing, it's just interesting that your first inclination is to travel. I find that to be a novel idea.
Yeah, I want to be able to what I want is I want a music career that is sustainable enough for me to want to do that. Like when I say that I wanted to be a musician and be able to tour and travel and all that kind of stuff, like I wanted to be able to do that. I wanted to be able to do it securely. I don't want to jump out there and just see what the hell happens as much as, you know.
Well, so
I don't want that kind of level, although I know many people that do, and I absolutely respect them 150% for that.
And some of the experiences that you can have in that type of a situation are worth more than any money that you can have.
Totally, 100%. And I think that's cool as hell. But that being said, and it's not like it wouldn't necessarily be impossible for me to do now, technically speaking. It would just be a ton of sacrifice for people that are involved in my life.
Yeah.
You know, my wife specifically, that we couldn't afford, and I wouldn't necessarily want to ask of that.
No,
you know?
completely understand that.
That being said, if we had the money, you kidding? Yeah.
Well, and interestingly, travel is a very common thing, as is the buying things for family members and whatnot.
Yeah.
But that's...
And I'm talking like world
traveling. No, I get you.
Not like, oh yeah, let's coast to coast the U.S. No.
Now see, I would... If I'm going to do any traveling after that, I would consider a I would do a U.S. food tour.
I would totally do that.
See, like, and again, sadly, my focus is definitely on food because, like, I'm talking about with the perfect house, having the walk-in freezer, the walk-in fridge, the walk-in pantry. I would also have, like, I don't know about you, but I prefer soda on tap as opposed to cans and bottles and whatnot. I would actually have soda on tap in my
house. Tap is better. Beer is better on tap. Soda's on tap.
I would have beer on tap. In fact, I already know which ones I would have. I would have Guinness. I would have Blue Moon. I would have Angry Orchard. Even though it's not really a beer, it kind of is a beer. And then I would probably have, just as a change up, Miller Genuine Draft. It sounds funny, but just it's actually a beer.
I get you. Beer wise, there's actually a Slurpee machine.
I'll pay whatever licensing. When you're that rich, you pay whatever licensing you have to freaking 7-Eleven to get the damn Slurpee machine. I want a Slurpee machine.
You know what I would like to have? Just like, I know they have like small, like household ones, which probably be all that we'd need. Popcorn machine.
Yeah. Popcorn machine wouldn't be too bad.
But I'm talking like movie theater.
No, I know what you're talking about. The wife and the kid would love it.
You know what I'd do? I'd build myself a flipping movie theater, man.
That would be a part of the house. That would be so sick. Yes.
Yes.
That would be part of the house. Yeah. And you know how you enter the movie theater?
How I would enter the theater?
And at my house?
How?
At this
would you do the ticket booth and the whole thing?
No ticket booth.
Okay.
Even better.
What would you do?
Even better. You'd walk into the game room, because I'd have a game room as well. With like a full one wall, it's a full big TV. See, I've thought about this.
Dude, you have, and I'm like offshooting off of what, like, there's other things. Okay, you finish your thing.
There's indoor pool, there's a game room.
Dude.
There's...
You're talking mansion level stuff, which it's $80 million, duh.
One floor, not two story. I'll have a one story building. It'll just be a massive, big one story building, 12 foot ceilings. But one story. The reason why one story?
Well, you just don't want to deal with the...
I don't like going up and down stairs, man.
Yeah.
I have to live in two-story houses now because I need enough rooms for everybody in the damn house to
have room.
So when you're dealing with that...
Smaller footprint.
Yeah, when you're in a normal neighborhood, you have to have a two-story house to have a five-bedroom house. It's just the nature of things. I intend to have like a 20-bedroom house and it be one story, so I need a lot of land instead. I want like 10 acres of freaking land.
Okay.
The whole house isn't going to cover the whole 10 acres, but still, I want room.
I was going to say, like, that a house that size may have to be a 10-acre house.
Not necessarily. Okay. It can work. But still, I've had the thoughts of these. So you're in the game room, right?
Uh-huh.
And sitting in the corner is a TARDIS.
Nice.
You open the TARDIS, walk inside the TARDIS, boom, you're in the theater.
I like it. So there's like, okay, here's the deal. Game room.
Yeah.
Basic game room. I'll have a basic game room. I'll have a console room, and then I'll hold a whole freaking arcade in the other room.
Of course.
In another room, I would have an arcade room, and not like size of a bedroom. I'm talking about this thing's going to be the size of a small house.
Yeah.
It will be, you know what I would theme it under?
See, you're getting the idea here.
You know what I would, oh yeah, totally. You know how I would theme that arcade? I would actually theme it like, there was, So down in Old Sacramento, downtown Sac, there was an arcade there that my buddy's dad used to service. He used to be work for Namco, and he worked for Namco and he used to service arcades. There was a arcade. I can't remember the name of the arcade. If I called my buddy up, it was a basement arcade.
Yeah.
So you're walking around like downtown Sac, and you're on like the wood sidewalk.
Yeah.
And you go into this room, you go down into a basement, and it's a flipping full arcade in there. So awesome. Like that, I would do that any day of the week.
I remember a mall somewhere in the East Bay or Bay Area where it had a basement level arcade, and it was huge.
Basement arcades are awesome.
See, that would be, you're getting the thought frame here.
Totally. It's like the only other arcade I really liked was there was a giant arcade that used to be out of the Birdcage Mall in Citrus Heights.
Okay, I never saw that.
Now it's like a giant, I think it's off Broadway Shoes now is what it is. But that used to be an arcade. Best arcade in town.
See, I would go into things like, you know, I've talked about all these different rooms as far as like the walk-in freezer, the walk-in fridge. You have to have a kitchen to match that. So you got a kitchen where your stovetop has to have like 8 burners on it.
Right.
You have 2 ovens, 2 dishwashers.
Oh, yeah.
Frankly, if you're going to be having that much food around, industrial kitchen here. Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, sir.
It's weird. You start brainstorming this stuff, and like you got the basic ideas down, like I was saying, but dude, I like where you're going, and I think I would definitely do the same
thing.
And
here's the thing. Your studio on the same property.
Yeah.
So just take one of them like little Gator golf carts or those Gator, you know, those little Gator carts.
Yeah.
You can drive one from the studio up to the house.
I like it.
So, you know, you're there at the studio and, you know, drive on up and grab something to eat or something for lunch and head back to the studio.
There you go.
And why? Because at that point, you know, you walk into the fridge and you can have anything that you wanted. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine the things that you could have.
I dig that. You know what I would also do on my property? I'd have a live venue. I'd have a live music venue.
I could see you doing that.
I would do that. Live music venue in the backyard, dude. Or something. It wouldn't be much of a backyard. It'd probably be its own separate building, but I would condition it for sound properly and throw some lights in there, wire it for video, like do the whole thing.
Well, if it was me, I would make it capable for both music and theater productions, because that's just me.
Dude,
which wouldn't be
tell me about it. There'd be a film studio somewhere on my property, too.
Probably.
You know, the giant warehouse-sized green...
Green screen room. Not even the green screen room. You've seen the CGI Beowulf movie, right? Came out like 10 years ago.
You know what?
I never did,
and I read the Beowulf story
when I was in high school. You saw Polar Express, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Polar Express and Beowulf were using the same technology, roughly the same technology, that they that was kind of perfected with Andy Serkis's performances in The Lord of the Rings and
Because before then, it was just like movies. Horrendous, uncanny valley Tom Hanks.
Well, the Polar Express was very uncanny valley, and you got a little bit of that with the Beowulf.
Yeah.
But if you actually get a chance to ever see the production stuff of it, the behind the scenes stuff, the Beowulf shooting, the hero Beowulf is like 6.5 feet, almost 7 feet tall. In it. And he's animated, okay? But Beowulf himself was just supposed to be a huge he's a huge mythic figure, right?
Yeah.
He's played by the actor Ray Winston.
Why do I not know that name?
Because he's not been in a whole lot of major things as a major lead role. But you would probably know him from, let me see, did you see the Clive Owen King Arthur movie? Owen, Ewan Gruffith?
No.
Okay. You did see Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Indiana Jones Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Yes, I did.
In the very beginning, when sorry, spoilers for people that haven't seen Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
I love
the tangent we've gone off on from talking about the lottery.
We're literally talking about winning the lottery, and now we've gone into bad
Indiana Jones. Anyway,
bad George Lucas movies. Spielberg. Yeah,
no, it's Spielberg.
Spielberg and Lucas, right?
Yeah. But anyway, in the very beginning, they show up at Area 51. You got the Russians and whatnot.
Yeah.
And there's Indy, and there's another guy that he's been doing stuff with.
Yeah.
Kind of British guy.
Yeah. That's that guy that played Beowulf?
That's Ray Winston. He played Beowulf. Now, he's only like 5'8" in real life.
And he plays like a 7-foot tall
the reason they're able
monolith
to do that,
of a man.
Yeah, the reason they're able to do that is because it's all this motion capture.
It's all CGI, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the way they set it up is they had something called the void space, where they'd set up all these cameras to check to record the markers that were all over the bodies and all over the stuff.
Yeah.
But it was this huge space. So all the actors are acting together within this space and then getting the stuff done on it.
Oh, that's how they did. We could create a full void space. Yeah. That's how they did a lot of games now. They do that with games.
They do that with games.
For all the cutscenes and whatnot. The Last of Us is one of them. Yep. I think they do that with the Telltale games too.
Yes.
Those are great, by the way.
To me, I see that as people are still wanting to see real film and real filmmaking done, but personally, I see a future in the in these animated films that use the heavy motion capture stuff. And I do think I think Andy Serkis, for example, is well beyond the time frame where he should have gotten an Oscar for his acting capabilities.
Has he
not? Because every role
that
he's done,
they were going to make like a category specifically for him.
He'll probably end up getting one of those lifetime achievements.
Oh, he's totally going to get one of those.
Because when it comes to motion capture stuff, he is the king of doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's nobody that has an understanding as well as him and that can emote and create a character in the way that he can create a character doing that.
Yeah.
But
speaking of what's going on right now, the subject is what would you do if you were a millionaire?
So I would create, anyway, the point being, I would create, instead of a full movie studio, I would do like the void space situation and be able to make films that way.
Make CGI movies?
Well, because this 5'6", you know, fat ass of myself can basically be any character that I want to envision. I can act it. I can emote it with all the dots on my face.
Yeah.
And then just have somebody who's a hell of a lot smarter than me and knows how to use all the equipment.
Yeah.
Put the skin of whatever character is on me. And my voice, my actual acting, because they're using the face of it. I mean, hell, look at what the Avatar movies have done. Admittedly, I'm James Sutherland, not James Cameron, but still, that would be my way of making movies.
I mean, you got to learn how to do that. You got to learn how to use that stuff. But yeah, absolutely, it takes
void space movie studio if we win the lottery.
Dig it
for
dig
sure.
It. I'm down on that. That sounds great. Well, so, hell, now what, man?
Well, I've told basically most of what I would do. Again, gigantic one-story house, make sure that my kids have a place forever, and I don't ever have to leave it because I get food delivered, and I don't have to go to stores, which makes me so happy. And music studio, bunch of other stuff added in. And see, the key is, you have a big house, so it's going to have a high tax bill. This is the thing that people, when they win the lottery, they don't think about.
Right,
they
totally.
Go and buy a $30 million house, and then they have to pay taxes on a $30 million house.
Of course, and it's ridiculous.
And that's what ends up killing them.
Yeah.
So when you build this gigantic house that has all these wonderful things, put in regular wood flooring. Instead of wood flooring that's like $5,000 a square foot, just put in regular flooring.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get like the teak and mahogany and all this other garbage and have all these upgrades that beautify the place, but jack your price up as high as it can be. I would build the place where it doesn't look bad, but I'm also not going to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for one set of material when I can just as easily pay a couple thousand dollars for the set of material. Well, and it's just as nice and again, keeps my tax bill down.
Well, yeah. That's kind of funny because that's essentially what my parents do. What they do is they buy land.
Yeah.
And then what they do is they buy the land essentially, or they'll buy a house that's super run down.
Yeah.
And either completely get rid of it or literally bring it down to foundation and refine the house as it exists. So they buy the house or they buy the land cheap and build a house on it or build around a house in order to refine it. And now it's just straight material costs and they'll turn around and flip it.
Well, that's a different scenario than buying the place or building the place.
Yeah.
And intending for you and your kids to live in it for as long as humanly possible.
Totally.
As long as y'all are alive.
Totally.
And that's why, you know, get the things that are, you know, get it all done appropriate and right.
Yeah.
But don't be spending money on cosmetic stuff that's all it's going to do is jack up your property value.
Right.
And, you know, not really help you in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, you might as well be practical. And you're thinking instead of just, what I like about this is you're not thinking about, okay, I would buy a house that would be built like this.
No.
You're like, buy the land.
Build my house.
Yeah, buy the land and build the house. It's a whole different story.
And I forgot to add, part of the reason I would have it a single story, build the roof as solar panels. And get the appropriate paperwork done so that I can have at least one windmill on property so that I am completely completely self-sufficient for power. There you go. And the reason I want to buy land somewhere is also to get on a well.
I was going
to
say, hook it up with well water.
And this is the place. This is the place where I don't skimp
that is
on money.
Off the grid level stuff, was, right there.
I don't want to skimp on money on this place.
Yeah.
On this thing. This filtration system for for my thing.
Yeah.
That's where you spend the big money.
Yep.
I'm not talking like, again, stupid money, but you buy the best one that you can buy.
Yeah.
That's going to last the longest and going to give you the clearest water. The reason I do that is actually a very funny reason.
Yeah.
I was driving into practice for the play I'm in.
Right.
The other day.
Uh-huh.
And what was interesting about it is as I was driving in, I saw storms overhead.
Right.
And saw lightning coming through the storms. I'm like, oh, okay. We got some storm happening.
Right.
And I need to pay attention to my phone because if storms are happening like this, power's going to go out at home. Well, my kids do not do well with power going out. They have all kinds of issues. In fact, I had to leave one of your shows early one time because power went out. Because
power went out of the house?
Luckily, it was a show that you guys had only got to play two songs, so you were already done.
So were you open for a national that day?
It was for two nationals that day.
It was that show?
It was that show.
Oh, that was a good set songs.
Where your drummer was groped. Before the show. By the lead singer of one of the national bands.
Okay, so stop. You need to stop.
But anyway, we didn't get to see the second national band because we had to leave early.
Okay.
And had to go home because the people who were watching my kids, the power had gone off. And so we had to try to get home as quick as possible because they don't deal with that. I don't want my power to go off because PG&E goes down or the normal electric goes down. I want them to have my own grid, my own setup.
Yeah.
Plus, in case all these idiots are right and there's some kind of apocalypse, be it zombie or otherwise, I want to be prepared for that crap.
Yeah, totally.
That doesn't mean I'm going to be buying like weapons or whatnot because not necessarily that type of person, but I at least want to have my my power and know that I have a fridge and a freezer that I can keep food in or dead bodies or whatever.
Okay. So, anyways, I think we're going to wrap this one up.
Yes, we are. And so, yeah, hopefully this was a little bit of a more fun insight into us. And our what we would do given large sums of money.
Hey, by the way, if any of you guys are listening, you know, comment what you would do. $80 million is a lot of money. We're talking like $80 million take home. What would you guys do with it? You know, so yeah, let us know. Comment, and we'll see if we can revisit this at a later time.
Yeah, we'll talk about whatever comments are there. We'll talk about some people's comments and give maybe our opinions on what you guys think you would do.
Yeah.
All right, we'll be out now. We'll talk to you later.
All right, thanks so much.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.